Hey, you Prime members, you can listen to Three Little Words ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
This podcast is brought to you by Quorn, the nation's favourite meat-free brand. Quorn is a great partner for this show because their products have been in our house for years, because I'm a vegetarian, so it's always in my fridge. So for every podcast, Tony gives us a Quorn fact.
I do, John. As I like to call them, a quacked. And this week's quacked is Quorn is a super protein. It's high in fibre, low in saturated fat, and contains no cholesterol whatsoever.
So if you're looking for cholesterol...
Yeah, this isn't wrong place.
So if you're going vegan, vegetarian, or just cutting down on meat a bit, you'll find that Quorn is a great option because they've got so many different products, from cocktail sausages to Turkish-style kebab. There's something for everyone.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Three Little Words. I'm here with Tony Pitt, and our guest today is a writer, musician, but probably best known as an artist. He won the Turner Prize in 2001 and exhibited all over the world in various forms and art installations. He's the unique, I think it's fair to say, Martin Creed. Martin, thanks for coming and doing the show.
Hi, all right.
Hi, Martin, nice to see you. I should say I don't really know Martin. I kind of know Martin through Jim, but I think it's fair to say I'm a fan. And,
you can't just say Jim. Everyone's going,
oh, no, of course I can't just say Jim. Jim Moyer, Vic Reeves. I think it's VV Imp to make you feel well, so hell, Martin. That's a reference to one of Martin. If you don't know Martin's work, please go and find it after this, because it is glorious. I was trying to think of a word to sum up Martin's work, and I think I like audacious as a description.
Actually, that's a good point, Martin, because I've been introduced to your work because you were coming onto the show, and I had heard of you actually, and I remember the furore. Because every year the Turner Prize is awarded, and every year someone goes, what's
They're all
that?
Angry.
Everyone's angry. So that's when your face came to my consciousness. But how would you describe your art, if you could?
Oh, I don't know. In fact, I would not really... I don't like calling it art, because I've never known what that word means, you know. So when people ask me what I do, you know, I don't say... I'm an artist, because I don't know what it means. Yeah. I say that I work in the field that's known as art, because basically art galleries are places that I've been able to do stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I think when I was a teenager, I remember I was trying to, you know, I was really into music, and I was into reading a lot, and I was into psychology and architecture, and I was trying to decide what to, try to go to study at college or university, and I just couldn't decide. And but in the end, I thought that art was up, like the subject called art, let you do what you wanted. And it was like that at art school. You know, people were... when I was at art school, everybody was, doing... I mean, there was kind of weird performances, you know, someone throwing baked beans at the wall and...
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's cut to the chase then, because, when you say, It's difficult to define what you do. You work in the field that people will call art. There's a traditional view of what art is, which is something you can kind of recognise or represent something else. And then there's another level of performance art and installation art. You won the Turner Prize for two things, one of which was turning lights on and off. I think that was the title of it, wasn't it?
It was. It's called The Lights Going On and Off.
The Lights Going On and Off, which was an empty room where the light went on and off every 5 minutes. But a lot of people hearing that will go, well, how can you call that art? Because what's that challenging? What's that making you think of? Why? And also, how did you reach the journey of going, I've done my day's work today, I've got the lights going on and off?
Well, the thing, if someone said that to me, I wouldn't necessarily, try to defend it particularly, because I think that it's not hurting anyone.
That's right.
Although it might hurt
their
eyes.
Sensibilities. Well, the sensibilities.
It might give you a headache, but it was more, so for me, that work, I'd call it a stupid little thing. I was like, it was like a failure. It was like, I was thinking, right, like, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know what I want to make or try. And I don't know what's beautiful, what isn't. And if you have an exhibition, you're basically saying, hey, look at this. Isn't it great? But if there isn't anything that you think is really that great to put in the middle of the room and say, look at this. What can you do? And that's how that came about, because I was thinking, well, I can't, there isn't any one thing. I like it, a lot of the time my favourite times are, just sitting on the tube, and I notice some, or I hear some weird thing, some people talking, or see a beautiful thing glimpsed out of a taxi or something, just something, not a painting on the wall, and not a big official film at a cinema, or something like that. Like, often think when I go to art galleries, often like I might go and see I can remember doing things like going to the Louvre in Paris to see the Mona Lisa, but I don't really remember seeing the painting, but I remember queuing for the painting. And I remember other stuff, and I remember having a laugh at on the metro on the way to see the painting. And I often think it's like that, the things you... But to go back to the lights going on and off, I feel like it's really... I don't know, it's just really difficult to do things. And so with that, I just thought, well, that's just a failure. I can't decide. I don't know. So I'm just going to not do anything. I'll try and do something, but without adding anything.
Yeah, one
exhibit. That's how it came about. I wanted to do something without adding any stuff to the room. And the lights were the one thing. I thought, well, there's lights in rooms,
It's interesting.
That is the best bit.
Interesting to me, because I have been one of those ones going, oh, my God, and you see the Turner Prize. I could have done that in 2 minutes. But over years and over time, what I've become to appreciate is that the essence of life are those moments that you say when you're sat on a tube and something itchy or something's unusual, something out the corner of your eye. And that's not always framed in the most perfect way. And it's not always derived from hours and hours and hours and hours of building something. It's just suddenly happened.
Exactly. And it's not, and it's kind of like, it's sort of stupid, or it's like, it's not like full of,
it's instinctual, right?
Well, I think
it's instinctual and not considered. And that's where, again, where people say, I could have done that. I could have done that. And so, well, you didn't.
And they could, of course, could have done it.
But they didn't.
To me, if it was possible to make a show or that was just consisted of all those kind of weird moments of mistakes and things, if it was possible to do that, that would be the best sort of show you could do, that was just kind of improvised and it wasn't anything really that was crafted or. Yeah.
To me, that's where the gold is. That's the most exciting part of repetition. To me, feels like death to me, and honing and crafting and trying to. That's not where my passion is. My passion is for that spark of.
Aye, aye.
And if it's wrong, there's no wrong and right. There's just attempts, right? Yeah. So, Martin, I'm going to ask you...
Oh, yeah.
...for your first word, please.
Yeah, the first word is words.
let me just quickly, I'll just quickly do, just, we'll do the etymology words. Of the word, yeah. It's from the old Proto-Germanic word, and then it's been used in lots of different ways. Having words with someone dates from the mid-15th century, that's a verbal altercation. A word to the wise is from a Latin phrase. Word for word is from the 14th century. Word of mouth is from the 1550s. And I've got some quotes about words. I mean, you can imagine how many quotes there are about words. Emily Dickinson said, "I know nothing in the world that has as much power as a word. Sometimes I write one and I look at it until it begins to shine." And then Virginia Woolf said, "When I cannot see words curling like rings of smoke around me, I'm in darkness, I'm nothing." And then finally, my favourite, Roald Dahl, "Don't gobble funk around with words." So, Martin Creed, that's beautiful, huh? So why did you pick words?
Just because I find choosing one word seems really difficult. But I thought that words, you know, covers it all, really. And I feel like words, like attaching words to feelings, which is what, like, I feel like it's very approximate and words are never really good enough.
No.
You know, you have to just keep throwing more words until you approximate something that, you know, might...
Yeah, and by the time you land it, that moment's passed.
Exactly.
You're searching for the next... I wonder, as an artist, if you experience the world... See, words are part of your work.
Right?
You do use words, don't you?
I do.
As part of the work, which is unusual, right? Rather than... just trying to capture in 3D, you use words.
I get into that when I was at art school, and I think that it's probably because when you're at art school, everyone's always asking you, they're always asking you to explain what you're doing. It's like, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? And I hated that.
Yes.
And I think, like, that, but this is just thinking about it now, looking back at the time, I wasn't really, but I think I started making work that I could use words to defend, you know, rather than, because you were always being asked to use words to defend it in these bloody seminars, you know, and that.
Presumably, that's why orthodoxies grow up. That's because you've got to have something that people can... And that was the thing of people being prescriptive about art, sort of not only wanting you to explain, but to say what constitutes art, you know, and what you're allowed to completely understand that.
Because maybe the thing about art that people might sometimes not like, or it just makes them feel uncomfortable because it's just kind of like weird, and you know, they don't, and that's why there's often at art galleries huge amounts of you know, writing and text on the walls next to the, like, because I try not to read that stuff, just try and walk around. But even if you try not, you suddenly find yourself to, just reading the, as if that explains it, which it doesn't really, because some person's idea of a, because I think words are always just words, they're not. They might. It's as if they're talking about something else, but they're, you know, you could say they're not really. They're just, all writing is like creative writing, even if it's like a review of a show or something.
But as Tony said, some of your use of words has been in your art. Some of the neons that you've done and so on. And there's a limitation in words, as you said at the beginning. You're talking about words as tools to explain a feeling, and it's never exactly right. It's so, because in order for it to explain what you're feeling, you have to mentally agree what that definition of that word
exactly
is
with the other person or people.
And so you're getting lost in that bit of, like, understanding what the colour red is, because it's called red, and then there's so many shades of red. And I get what you're saying. For you, though, as a artist, or and as a musician as well, can you think of a way to communicate that wouldn't involve words.
Yeah, but like, for example, like colour, you know, looking at colours, I just like bright, like those books on that bookshelf, that, like, it makes me happy. Like, I feel like it makes me happy to see, like, all different colours, but that might be as much on you, you know, that dark blue of your jumper, or the, or equally as with a painting in a gallery, as much as someone's jumper. You know, that's the thing. I just don't think there's a difference between these things, you know.
Yeah.
And I think I like just working on things with words in there, but not colours, music, you know, yeah, whatever.
So you've already mentioned a couple of times going to art school. And that obviously seems a pivotal time in your life. The person who entered art school and the person who left, what was the difference in those two people?
I don't know, actually. I was very young. I was 17 years old when I... Because in Scotland, you leave school even a year earlier than... And I came to London, it was 17.
Wow.
So I was 21 when I left art school, which seems quite young. So if I think about when I left, I was like, I don't want to... Everyone, a lot of people I knew wanted to do, like, postgraduate, just continue, you know,
yes,
like, with a student.
Yes.
But I was like, no way do I want to be in an institution.
So I was wondering at 17, because I was just thinking to myself at 17. So at 17, I kind of think you know what you don't want.
Aye.
You kind of, because you can see around you what's not right for you. But so presumably you left Scotland on your own.
Yeah.
I'd just got on a train and got
Glasgow I left.
Right,
and,
okay.
It was a suburb of Glasgow where my mum and dad still live, actually.
Aye.
And I went to the Slade School of Art. I mean, one of the things I remember when I left is, like, no way do I want a job. That was one thing. I just thought, no way, you know, like... As long as I... And the other thing I remember about then is I smoked a lot, and I don't know how I could... it's just irregular cigarettes. I don't know how I afforded it, but I was always like, as long as I can smoke, you know, I'm all right, you know,
yeah.
Like...
the reason I asked that question, though, is because there's an explanation you're going to... have to give yourself, as you said earlier, about why you chose art school and what you're doing there. And then when you come out of it, you're going to have to explain to yourself what the future is for and what you... And you can only... The only tools that you've got to do that is words.
Right, I see.
And so those words start assigning a job to yourself or a role to yourself.
Yeah.
And it seems to me... you've evolved without the necessity of following either of those titles, which is a great achievement in itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, I think I was trying not to be pinned down.
You've refused the tyranny of definition.
I get
that completely, the idea of thinking, well, if I've got some fags...
Aye.
..and I don't have to have my spirit crushed every day, I'll be all right.
Aye, exactly, aye.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I see the aye words can really hem you in then if you're, like... Yeah.
Absolutely. I was only saying it the other day to my wife. We were just talking about something, sort of about my own kids and what they're doing. And I said, you know, if all of a sudden you get an interview on the news and it's got your name, what did he put underneath to describe who you are and what you do? Because that is your portal to the world and the world's portal to you.
Yeah.
Now, if you've got Martin Creed, somebody who works in a field that some regard as art, that's a long title instead of artist.
They will not use that.
You're both going to love this. I don't think you're going to love this. I saw something yesterday, Martin, and it was a census from 1880. Describing what everybody did for a job. It was horsekeeper or something. And it was 1880 in Leeds, and she was called Sarah Stubborn. And it said next to her, professionally said, does what she wants. Which I just thought was absolutely fabulous. So,
you know, that's been a response. I mean, if someone's been there with a quill and some parchment going, what do you do? What I like!
Do whatever I like. So that was your first word, Martin. That's fantastic. Again, it's... endless of possibilities. So your second word
is yes.
Your second word is yes.
Oh, yeah.
So this is a very The words yes and no are not easily classified into any of the eight conventional parts of speech. Sometimes classified as interjections, but they're not really, and they're not adverbs. So I think everybody understands the definition of the word yes. A couple of quotes. What is no? Either you've asked the wrong question or you've asked the wrong person. Find a way to get yes. That's Jeanette Winterson.
Right.
Richard Branson. I'm a great believer that saying yes is a lot more fun than saying no. And then my favourite one, when I find out who said it, is the oldest, shortest words, yes and no, are those which require the most thought. And that's Pythagoras.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So why did you choose the word yes, Martin Creed?
I think it's to do with a feeling that I can't say no, but that I want to say no. I think I say yes because I basically feel no. You know, I feel negative primarily, I think, usually if someone asks me something or I'm presented with something that happens and, you know, it's like, shit, like,
no,
I'm scared, I'm, yeah. You know. But then I feel bad about that. I feel like it's saying no to life. It's like that's going to lead. I always feel like in a split second, I think, shit, that's going to lead to me just
falling,
being on my own in my room. You know, which is what I do at the moment.
Is it about life in general when there's a specific, I don't know, project you've got to complete or something?
That I get that feeling.
Yeah.
It's just an overall feeling of difficulty of life, really, I'd call it. You could call it depression-type feeling, but I wouldn't exactly call it that. And work, the thing is that I feel like doing work really helps me a lot, but I feel also that doing work often is really, just really difficult. You have to force, you know, it's like even to do something you want to do, yes. I think you often have to really force yourself. That's what I find anyway. It's like just really like, force myself to do this thing that I know that I want to do.
Well, it's that thing.
I suppose
that,
it's like self-motivation is difficult.
Yeah, it's that thing that is defined as a work ethic. But
right.
In reality, is just, I think, the grind. Because it's not, you know, even those people with a good work ethic, like I think I've got a good work ethic.
Aye, right.
But as more as I get up and I go, I'm doing this because I know if I don't do it, I'll be more pissed off than if I do it. But it's levels of pissed offness. It's not levels of life.
Yeah, levels. See, my level.
No.
Yeah, my levels are, I think, even worse, because I don't want to do the thing that I love.
Yeah.
The thing that I love is writing.
Right, aye.
And I think, oh, for fuck's sake. Because I've had I love the idea that I've had. I think, oh, that's beautiful.
Aye,
that world's amazing. That world with those people, and they could do this, and they could do that, and they could. And all that buzzes me. And then I think, oh.
But it's hard.
It's to do with the. Sorry.
No, I was going to ask you, because this is one of the things that I've always wanted to ask somebody in your position, where you will get a commission from a city or from an institution to create something. So they haven't come to you and said, right, you know, we want you to, I don't know, manufacture 50 pairs of shoes or something.
Right.
They've said, we want you to come up with something for this space.
Aye.
Do you just get a blank sheet of paper? Is there a negotiation beforehand? In other words, do you carry the burden of having to create something from nothing that they hopefully love?
Well, both of those things have happened. And usually, in the more, like, if there's... I've had commissions that are more like... I was thinking that I had this thing where they just want you to do anything you want. But actually, if I really think about that, I don't know if that's ever really happened.
No.
I mean, the gallery that are basically the people who try and sell my work, they sometimes, if they ask you to do an exhibition, that's basically a blank.
Yeah.
You've got a blank sheet. But... I think one of the first times I really used words, funnily enough, was in a public commission. And it was because it was a public commission, I think, that I thought I should because I wanted to try and I thought I need to try and be direct.
Is that the one in Auckland?
No, it was that. The first one I ever did was in London in the East End, and it was on an old orphan asylum. It was an orphanage. It was like a, and I think that was the thing. I was like trying to say yes, because basically I was like, shit, man, I'm doing a public commission. I've never done this before, because I'd always done shows in art galleries, and if you do a show in an art gallery, basically people are, who go there,
yes,
are asking for it.
Asking for it, yeah, yeah, exactly. They've got everything, got it coming to them.
Kind of
yeah.
innocent passers-by.
Yeah, you don't
want to. But I think that's the brilliant thing that's happened in recent years.
Right.
You're getting yeah. more of that public commission
oh, yeah,
that's bringing
yeah.
you out through. But like as Tony said, you know, I can just imagine, you know, it's perfect if it's good. But you are exposed to a lot of people going, that's a bit shit, isn't it?
But it's like busking or something. You're shouting at people as they go past, effectively. And so I thought I need to. So I think that's why I thought I have to basically do something positive, like for want of like try and be nice.
Yeah.
And everything is going to be all right. Was that? I was just thinking, well, you know, it needs to be, and it can't be. You can't be like trying to be clever, or you know.
Did you repeat that in Auckland, though? Because in Auckland, you same. Also did whatever as well, didn't you?
I did whatever as well. It's quite negative.
Yeah, but it's just big neon writing, whatever.
The idea that if somebody's bought a ticket to see your show or have listened to something of mine, that they've asked for it, is so fantastic.
Yeah, but it's true.
I know it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true.
You're preaching to the converted almost. But it's like me and you. It's like you having a performance out there of one of the things you've written, or me just standing in Trafalgar Square trying to do a gig.
That's what tickled me. It was just that. And it's also sort of, there could be no complaint. Do you know what I mean? You can never have to justify yourself. If somebody says, well, I didn't like it, well, nobody's forced you in, have they? Whereas in a public space, there's got to be some sort of leaning towards
it. But also with a public commission, though, isn't that public funds?
Sometimes it is, but I wasn't. But I guess that's what another use of the word, but I'm not really thinking so much of that. It's funny, I haven't done that many public-funded commissions because... Well, there was a couple that I just ended up, like, I just got either get sacked or I sacked myself. One was in, I remember it was in Norwich. And I think it was just to do, there was so many meetings, it's so...
Yeah, that was going to be my whole point. That's why I asked about the funding of it, because when it's public funding... It immediately meetings. Says there's a committee. Someone's got to justify it. And your art, particularly, as any art, really, can't be done by a committee.
Aye, exactly. And it's funny, I came up with this thing. The one in Norwich, it was one that I came up with. I later did make this work, but I thought of it then for this commission that I got. I got the commission. They asked me to do it. And then it was like, well, what do you want to do? And I came up with this big, it was going to be a big neon sign that was going to saying mothers spinning round. It was going to be as big as I could possibly make it.
Yeah.
You know, because you know when you do, you know, when you write words, it's a weird thing that like, why, if you make a neon sign, generally they're quite big words.
Yes.
But if you think about it, like what's the difference between a little word written on a bit of paper and a massive word? In neon, I mean, in a way, I feel like there's not really that much difference. Why don't you may as well just write it on a bit of paper, you know?
But it's suddenly imbued with something, right?
Because if you make it big or... Anyway, so I was thinking about... I was worried about that, kind of thinking, what is this thing with neon? I'm doing all these neons. What is it with this? What the hell, you know? So the reason that mothers came up was because, like...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A mother has to be bigger than our baby, you know, by definition. Has to, you know, to carry...
Unless you're a seagull. Yeah. In which case.
And so... Anyway, I came, for some reason, I got onto this thing that I was excited about. I was like, mothers, it's going to be brilliant spinning round. Quite dangerous, you know?
Yeah. What sort of size are you talking about?
5 metre high letters or something.
Wow.
It was about 20 metres long or something like that. It was on a massive I-beam.
And they said no.
Spinning round. Well, the thing is, no, they were kind of into it. And then I would go to these committee meetings with councillors and they'd be like, well, why mothers? You know?
Yeah. That's the end of the discussion, right?
It's like, you know, I was like, well, you know, there's mothers in, you know, Norwich.
Norwich is like, full of mums.
I've never been so tickled in my life.
And then they wouldn't accept that as an expert. And they were like, no. How did you come up with the idea? And I was like, well, I was like, I don't know. It just kind of was on the toilet or whatever, you know. They wanted an explanation of how the idea came about, and because I couldn't really give it to them, then they wanted me to do research. So they wanted me to go and be in around, hanging around at the maternity hospital.
You know, they wanted you to like, lie. They wanted you to lie.
You know, to
lie.
Kind of like give a kind of like...
Yeah. But also, without being too sympathetic to the bureaucrats, because that is bonkers. Like, you know, go to the
maternity hospital. Yeah, but I think I'm being a bit unfair as well.
But there's also a little bit where you are holding public funds, so you have to... You know, people are going to say, what have you done? But you can imagine the people coming out and go, what's that council tax going on? Yeah, look at that! Yeah, it's just mothers!
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was thinking that's where... The clash of those committee members, they've come in completely the wrong way. They've said, right, make us something. So you've made you something. And I said, now explain it to us in language that we can then justify to explain. So it's that, and it's that, and... To me, they really did have it coming. They deserved it. But the idea of doing it by committee, the idea that you can make art by agreement is ludicrous.
Aye.
You need a stone and a bit of steel to make a spark. You can't make it by rubbing two bits of wool. You need...
I know, it's difficult.
Yeah.
But I feel like that is the difficulty of government as well. That, you know, you can't... It seems like you can't have governments without basically putting people in boxes.
Yes.
You have to treat them as units, you know.
And compromise.
Everything has to be, you know, somehow explicable in certain ways, because otherwise they can't...
Yes.
Make it, and that's the problem with government as much as like.
I understand completely. It's compromise, isn't it? It's to co-promise. That's the word compromise.
Yeah.
Co-promise. Yeah, so yeah. So any hope of authenticity or originality or is gone because it's cobbled together by something that we agree is acceptable to the people. The idea of that thing in Norwich.
Imagine fathers for justice tearing up the Batman outfit going, mothers, look at them, what about
smashing
us?
Smashing
Where's that neon sign? Why did they always leave us? I'm coming to get your kids at the weekend. I'm not really Batman. No, man, that's a brilliant word. Yes, I didn't think it was going to take us down that avenue. Fairness for justice.
Just
I've
got to find out. Just pick up before we move on. Just for my, how did that end then? The giant mothers in Norwich. What was did they say to you? Just forget it. You're not making it.
Yeah, they got back. They eventually, because I just said, look, I can't. You know, I can't do the explanation because I, you know, that would be, it'd be artificial. And then eventually they came. Eventually, then they kind of went a bit quiet, and then eventually they came and said, look, you know, it's not working. And they,
was there an email trail? There must be.
They did the classic thing of, like, you know, they got, I think they eventually got a local art. That often happens, did you moms. Know, if you're a local.
Yeah.
You know, then that can be justified in terms of spending. Okay.
Yeah.
But I love the idea that the word you picked was yes, but the end of the story was no.
Oh, Martin. Right. So, I'm sorry for the listeners. I will pull myself together. Okay. So, what's your final word, Martin?
The final word is nada.
Okay. Nada.
This is what I say to you, Martin Creed. I nada, Martin nada. Be thy name, thy kingdom nada. Thy will be nada in nada, as it is in nada. Give us this nada, our daily nada, and nada is our nada. As we nada our nadas, and nada those who nada, but deliver us from nada. Hail nothing, full of nothing, nothing is with thee. And that's from Hemingway, and that's where the slang version of nada comes from. It's Hemingway's from 1933. Obviously, it's from the Spanish nada, meaning nothing. But it's first used in Hemingway's A Clean, Well-Lighted Place, set in a Spanish cafe in which the world figures largely around the word nada.
Well, you know, that's amazing, because I did not remember that. But when I was a teenager, Hemingway was my favourite. One of my favourites, because my teacher at secondary school was into Hemingway, and I even remember that short story of Clean Well, like, but I don't remember the. I remember it now, maybe somewhere you don't remember it. But the reason for that word is that I wanted to have a foreign word, foreign to me.
Yes,
obviously that's not foreign word to a lot of people.
It was Spanish.
Because I feel like speaking a foreign language, I feel like is like a really... I always think speaking a language as a foreign language is a really brilliant... I love it when people speak English as a foreign language. Yeah. I love that. I was also thinking about, you know, that because when it's your own language, it's almost... Because I feel like this thing happens with your feelings, that without, you know, behind your eyes, without you knowing what's going on, feelings just kind of like grab onto words.
Yes.
And if it's your own language that you know very, you know, they grab on so quickly that you don't even know it's happened.
Yes.
And then it's that, and you don't see the feeling, you just see the word, and the word is like, so then it's like, and then that you think that's what you feel because that's that word, but it's not really what you feel because it's not the word. Not.
I love that. Because when you said words right at the beginning, I was thinking that we are limited by our perception of what the language is trying to teach us, and the amount of times where I've been with somebody who's fluent in English, and they try to explain something from their own language and try and do a literal translation, and they go, there just isn't that word in English for that thing, that feeling, that emotion. And that, I think, is a brilliant example. It's like, you know, déjà vu. We've adopted it because we didn't have a word for déjà vu that meant déjà vu.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very resonant across all languages. Do you speak another language?
Not really. I bet I speak. So my mum is German, which is another reason. I was going to choose a German word, but then I don't know. So I grew up with my mum. She would break out into German when she was angry.
Yeah.
But my dad never spoke much German, so I grew up speaking without really being bilingual at all. But I understand quite a lot of German. And then I moved to Italy when I was about 30. Just before the Turner Prize, actually, I moved to Italy. So I met an Italian person. And it was a big love story. And I moved to Italy. And I was there for about 5 years.
So was your father... your mum was German. Your father was... Father's English, right?
He's English, not... So no one in my family's Scottish. We moved here when I was 3.
Right.
And then my dad's from Liverpool, Cheshire area.
Yeah, in the Wirral, yeah.
Aye. And but then I grew up in a suburb of Glasgow, because my dad got a job in Scotland, and then that's how I moved here.
So when you spent this time in Italy, I presume the other person's Italian. That's what took you there.
Aye, she's Italian, but she was from Milan, in fact. And
did you adopt much Italian?
Well, I think Italian's the language I understand most. I chose a Spanish word.
But, with a German mum, of course. Of course. Inevitably.
I don't want to be...
No.
But I went to Spain recently, and that's why I get into... some Spanish.
So it's the idea of not having that instant access to the language. So
aye,
then, so you,
which makes you
have to do the work, right? Look around to try to find something that actually does. Which is why I think that often great works of literature that are transcribed into English are just, I don't know what we're really reading, because it's not in its original.
No, but it's a funny thing. When I got really into Samuel Beckett when I was at art school, actually, as well, and reading all his writings, I really liked all the kind of funny, minimal, sort of really simple kind of... Yeah. But I read about his writing that he wrote in French because he wanted to be clear of his own... like all of
beautiful.
His own language.
That's useful, yeah. You have to really connect to find the...
So he wrote his famous play, Waiting for Godot.
Was written in French? No.
Aye. I think he said something that it helped him to treat language more simply, because if it's your own language,
you'd
it's
be
just
more concise,
so
yeah.
many
yes.
associations.
Wow.
And you can't separate it from your own...
I completely understand that, but I...
So it's you can be free maybe of some of the problems.
That makes sense. It makes sense now of his writing, because you'd have to be more concise, because you search and you cut loose from the associations, aren't you? That you...
Right, exactly.
Yes. Wow.
So you've picked Nada as an example specifically because that word, as I understand it, is no.
It's nothing.
Nothing, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's also because of the meaning nothing, because maybe I feel like the word nothing is a good example of why.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Words don't work, you know, because nothing, because
something becomes something,
because the word nothing is not nothing.
No, it's something.
And so, you know, for it really to be a good word, I mean, to describe nothing, you'd have to just be silent.
Yeah.
But then how could that be then communicated, because people would just think you weren't saying anything.
Larkin says nothing like something happens everywhere.
Oh yeah. So that's what I meant by the nada.
Yeah.
I also like the word nada because it's because, you know, it rhymes with itself. Nada, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's sort of like it's like wah wah or mama or baba or abba. But it makes me think of abba as well, which is a beautiful word because it's, you know, it's like symmetrical. But also it makes me think of the lyrics. I was thinking about that to do that speaking a foreign language or working in a foreign language, you know, I think the lyrics of ABBA are brilliant.
Yeah.
Partly because they're so, they're kind of painfully direct.
Yes.
And kind of awkward as well. And I think that's to do with it being a foreign language that they're trying to communicate, and it almost becomes a more blunt way of communicating because it's not subtle. You know, they're kind of almost like they've got their dictionary out, they're trying to communicate some love story thing.
That's so insightful.
But it's so enjoyable because it's so like, oh my, like so like weird. Like,
I can't stand ABBA, but suddenly now I'm interested to go. No, seriously, but
right,
I'm
how
now.
How can you not stand ABBA?
Well, because we've all got different tastes, but the idea of going back to listen to them with that insight.
No, like that song, The Winner Takes It All, is brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. The words to that,
Yeah.
Knowing me, knowing you. Uh-huh.
But that one, what's that one called? A Day? It's a story about a guy who goes to work and...
Some Kafka-esque interpretation. Of
but I always remember when money was like number one.
It's a rich man's world.
Yeah.
But I find that song so scary.
I remember when that was.
I think it's got like a.
I remember that was out and it's money. It's a rich man's world. Money. It's always sunny in a rich man's world.
Yeah.
Right, and you just think, oh, they've done that to rhyme. I remember me dad going, that's what it's like if you're rich, son. You can go on holiday when you want. I thought, it actually sums it up. It can always be sunny in a rich man's
all
world.
All the things I could do if I had a little money.
It's what you said. It's, you know, if you were English, it was your first language, you might go, oh, that's
a child would write it,
But when you're thinking about what you're trying to express, that's I've never, ever thought of it like that.
Beautiful insight. Aye. It's a beautiful, beautiful insight. Beautiful.
You know, it's a funny thing as well, that someone told me this, I don't know if it's, I think it might be true, but basically all ABBA songs fade out. fade out.
There's no
There's no apart from money.
Mama Mia. Yeah.
What do you conclude from
I
that?
I conclude that
you just run out of words.
No, it's really difficult to end.
Stop when you don't know.
You know, the problem with words is embodying. You know, the problem is a word is a finite thing, and with a song, you know, it's always difficult to end. You know, if you fade a song out, you're basically leaving the potential. You've got a kind of infinite.
Yeah. There can't be a de new one. Yeah, there could be no resolution in an ABBA song. Because it's that is such a beautiful insight. I'll never listen to them the same way again. I think I might now love ABBA.
Wow, I like them.
Really. Amazing. So that's your three words, Martin. Mm. What a treat. We always ask our guests for one word they'd happily never hear again. So which word would you happily never hear again?
Mine is PPE. And that's partly because I hate PPE. I hate what gets called PPE. I don't like wearing it. I don't like wearing a mask.
No.
I hate other people wearing masks. But also, I don't like abbreviations. That's one of the things about that. I mean, I don't like jargon where you don't know what anyone's talking about.
Yeah.
Often people write emails, work emails with like, and it's got loads of abbreviations in it. I don't even know what most of them mean.
It is true when something then becomes common parlance. So all of a sudden PPE is now just an understanding that everyone knows. But in reality, what it's saying is the acceptance of a barrier between you and somebody else.
Aye, exactly.
And that would never have been accepted except in these PPE. Unusual times. And I think it'd be great if it was put in the bin forever.
But I didn't know what it meant for the first 4 months of...
Yeah.
I kept reading it, I didn't know what it meant, and then until eventually I walked past a building site and it said PPE and then it had a picture of a mask. And I thought, oh yeah, it's to do with that.
It's to do with building sites. Well, that was fantastic, Martin. I'm so, so glad that you came in to see us today. That was just an absolutely fantastic episode.
Oh, me too.
Episode.
Thanks.
Cheers,
thanks
brother.
For having me.
Loved it.
Great joy. Lovely to meet you and spend time with you.
Oh, you too. Good one. Cheers.
Well, that was fun. I feel like I've just met Willy Wonka.
I absolutely adored talking to him. He's such an engaging... And I just reiterate what I said at the top of the episode. If you get a chance to... And it won't be for everybody, and nor should it be, but if you get a chance to take a look at Martin's work, having heard him speak then, absolutely. You shouldn't have favourites, but that was my favourite, I think.
Hope that you enjoyed that episode of Three Little Words as much as we did. I absolutely love doing this show with Tony, and the guests have been brilliant. Don't forget to subscribe, follow, leave us a review, recommend us to any of your friends, and it just remains for me to say also thank you to our sponsor, Quorn.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.
Enhance your listening experience with Wondery Plus. Enjoy ad-free listening, exclusive content, binges, and more. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.